that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're going to get across that wasteland, and we're going to do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast as always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, welcome you all to the show this week. I hope wherever you guys are, you're enjoying your summer, if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, of course, because here in Vancouver, Canada, it has been very unsummer-like the past couple of days. Today, especially, it was about 20 degrees or 68 Fahrenheit. It was wet, it was cold, it was windy, felt more like fall than summer, but it is supposed to be better by the time the weekend rolls around, and I'm hoping that by the time that does come to pass that we get some good weather for the weekend, because I'm really starting to miss summer. It's really been a little long in coming. We've had some nice days here and there, but a cold and wet and rainy day today was not really what the doctor ordered. Also this week, 50th anniversary of Apollo 11, the moon landing. I'm not old enough to have actually been, I wasn't alive when it all happened, and never was able to take in any of the Apollo missions, but as a kid and even as an adult, I've always been fascinated by all of that, and it's been really cool to see all the different things commemorating 50 years of the first manned mission to the moon. Pretty cool stuff. And if you're a fan of that sort of thing, you like podcasts, the one I can recommend, if you haven't listened to it all already, is called 13 Minutes to the Moon, and it's done by the BBC World Service, and it's I think about a dozen episodes or so, and it goes into the last, well, as the name implies, 13 minutes to the moon. It's the 13 minutes between when they land on the moon and the power descent. Really fascinating. A lot of really, really, really good interviews with a lot of the people that were involved, and lots of archival footage. So definitely worth checking out. But hey, we're not here to talk about the Vancouver weather. We're not here to talk about Apollo 11, but it is time to talk about Formula One. And as usual, at this time of year, there is just a pile of news to get through. So first of all, why don't we just go back and talk about what was an action-packed British Grand Prix at Silverstone last weekend, with Lewis Hamilton winning that one, beating his teammate rather handily in the end by about 24 seconds, but it could have been a little bit of a false indicator there, because Bottas stopped for a late pit stop and Hamilton disobeyed team orders to go in for a late pit stop, so the gap at about 24 seconds was a little misleading, but certainly that one was probably decided by the safety car, certainly in the early stages, what with Bottas leading off of the line after capturing pole, and the two of them going at it through the first couple of laps. It was really quite exciting, and really cool to see Valtteri Bottas fighting back. But just when the safety car came out there, when Giovinazzi put it into the gravel trap and couldn't get out, it really worked out rather fortuitously for Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel, who came in and took advantage of a free pit stop after everybody else had pitted just a couple of laps early, and that was really it. Bottas just wasn't able to get close enough to pass his or try and fight his teammate to pass him again for the lead, and that's the way that it was. But there are a whole bunch of things to talk about that Grand Prix, and yes, we're going to talk about Sebastian Vettel and Max Verstappen and what was probably the biggest and most controversial moment of the entire day. Anyways, let's start off first of all just recapping our top 10 at the British Grand Prix. As I mentioned, it was Lewis Hamilton winning the race, beating his teammate Valtteri Bottas. Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari taking the third position, the P3. Pierre Gasly for Red Bull actually doing a very good outing after what has been a bit of a tough stretch for him. And just a week ago, Red Bull boss Christian Horner saying that Gasly needed to press Control Alt Delete and reboot his season, and he did just that. So a P4, very good for Gasly. Max Verstappen coming home in fifth in the second Red Bull, which was, I think, very impressive considering there was a significant amount of damage the car sustained after he was rear-ended by Vettel. So P5, obviously, probably a little bit disappointing for Max, but all things considered, I'm sure he's glad that he was able to get some points rather than none, although I'm sure he was probably looking at least at P3 after it was all said and done. Sixth was Carlos Sainz in the McLaren. Seventh was Danny Ricciardo in the Renault. Eighth was Kimi Raikkonen in the Alfa Romeo. Ninth was Danny Kvyat, which I thought was a good outing for the Russian. So he got ninth for the Toro Rosso. And rounding out the top 10 was Nico Hülkenberg in the second Renault. So let's quickly just take a look at the Drivers' Championship. Lewis Hamilton still way on top with 223 points. His teammate Valtteri Bottas still second in the World Championship with 184. Max Verstappen in third position with 136. Sebastian Vettel still clinging on to fourth in the Drivers' Championship by the narrowest of margins. He now has 123 points, and his teammate Charles Leclerc rounds out the top five with 120 points. But let's give a bit of a shout out to Pierre Gasly after having that good outing on Sunday. He is sixth in the World Championship with 55 points. So now on the other side of the World Championship in the Constructors, we still have way up at the top, and no surprise here, of course, because it has been an all-silver season, bar Austria a couple of weeks ago. Mercedes running away with the World Championship, currently 407 points. That is almost double, well, not almost double, but getting close to it. Ferrari have 243 points, second the World Championship, and Red Bull currently third in the World Championship with 191 points. McLaren still doing pretty decent on their return to form this season, 60 points, and then rounding up the top five in the Constructors is Renault starting to move up a little bit. They now have 39 points in the Constructors, so be fun to watch as we wind it down towards the summer break here, and as we pick it up again in at the end of August, and see how they do in the latter half of the season, whether or not they can claw up through the table here, and see if they can catch up to McLaren and perhaps even pass them. We'll talk a little bit later on, but Nico Hülkenberg thought that even though they came home with 7th and 10th at the British Grand Prix, that they still left points out on the track there. So good to see that Renault had a good result, but nonetheless, interesting that that Hülkenberg thinks that that there were still more points to be had. So who knows? Maybe they're finally starting to put their season together, which has obviously been a little bit disappointing in many ways. But let's first of all talk about some of the talking points about the British Grand Prix. There certainly were lots of them. First of all, Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc, that was a really good dice, the two of them. And Charles was saying that he raced Verstappen in a way that he said was harder than normal. And of course, these two have a little bit of a history, not too much, but a couple of weeks ago, they did have a bit of a coming together at the Austrian Grand Prix when Max really pushed his way through. And that was an incident that the race stewards deemed was inside the regulations. It was fairly aggressive, but Max is a hard-charging and aggressive driver, so nothing really unexpected from that point of view, but certainly was a little bit surprised at the time that the stewards didn't step in and perhaps come up with some sort of discipline, whatever that might be. You know, that's a bit of a different discussion, but certainly, like I say, it was an aggressive move. But Leclerc repaying the favorite Silverstone this past week, and Leclerc did say that he would respond to that decision by being tougher on the track than he has been before, and that's exactly what he did when he dealt out some what was a fairly tough, maybe borderline defensive moves against Verstappen at Silverstone. And Max on the flip side reckoned that Leclerc was still sore, his own words, after what happened in Austria. And then the Charles did say and confirmed that he was driving differently now, and just not against Verstappen. So Charles said, "Nothing personal, but after Austria I said if the stewards accept us to race this way, then I'm more than happy to race like this. This is what I did this this weekend. So nothing special. I just raced harder than normal just because I felt like in the last two races, or maybe a bit before, that Formula One wants hard racing. I think us drivers are pushing for hard racing. That's what we enjoy the most, to be racing like that, and that's what I did. So Leclerc did go on to say that the battles that he had at Silverstone really left him feeling a sense of enjoyment at that Grand Prix more than any other, especially in recent times. And I think it's good. I think, like I said, maybe last week or the week before on the show, that we want to see harder racing between some of these drivers. So if that's the way that Charles is going to do it, as long as within the rules and it's safe, he's not endangering himself or anyone else, I have absolutely no problem with that. But just the flip side of that incident, you know, you hear Max Verstappen, like I said, he said that he felt that Leclerc was still sore about his passing maneuver to take the lead at Austria a couple of weeks ago, but that was just the way that it happened. I mean, I don't think that there's any doubt that if Max didn't make the move where he did on the track, it was going to happen at the next one, or maybe two corners or three corners down the track, or maybe a lap or two later at most, because he was just absolutely flying in that second half of the race. He was just eating up opponents on the track like it was going out of style, passing people left, right, and center. He was just that much better on the day than everyone else. So it was really just a matter of time, I think, that just the difference between the way that Max's car was running for him and compared to everybody else on the track. Didn't matter if you were in a Mercedes, a Red Bull, Ferrari, or whatever it might be. If you weren't in the car that was the same as Max Verstappen's, and if you weren't Max Verstappen yourself, then there was only going to be one result out of that, and then you'd be looking at the wrong side of the of Max Verstappen's Red Bull disappearing down the track in front of you. So I think it was just going to be a matter of time before he got to Charles Leclerc. I don't see that turning out any other way than it did that afternoon. Like I say, like I said a little bit earlier, the big question about that was whether or not that was within the limits, the way that Verstappen really just barged his way through past Leclerc. But the stewards did take a look at it, and they decided that there was nothing to be punished there, and they let it go. And that's exactly what they did in the follow-up race in Great Britain last weekend, was that there was some borderline kind of stuff, but ultimately they have decided to let guys race a little bit more. And if they're going to be more flexible about that, then I think that's going to be a good thing for Formula One. And even Toto Wolff, team principal at Mercedes, he says what he calls borderline dirty British Grand Prix racing is good for Formula One. And he says that he enjoyed that. He's a fan of that sort of thing. The only thing he doesn't want to see is that it doesn't become like an intra-team battle. And of course, he's going to be more wary about that than probably any other team principal on the grid, having dealt with it way too many times in the past. And of course, that hasn't been the case between Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas the past two seasons. Of course, that goes back to the Hamilton-Nico Rosberg partnership that they had for several years. And well, I mean, we could go down the whole laundry list of incidents that happened between those two guys at Austria, at Spain, at Spa. I mean, there were numerous incidents. And I mean, just the way that it all played out. I mean, there was a lot of competition and a lot of toxicity between the two of them, but I've never heard a team principal come out and say in mid-season that if things continued the way that they were, that that they would actually end up breaking the contracts with one or even both of those drivers if things continued to go the way that they were. I mean, it probably, I'm sure for Toto Wolff, was a big relief when Nico Rosberg decided to call it a career and retire literally just days after winning the world championship, because who knows how that relationship between himself and Lewis Hamilton would have gone had he decided to stay in and keep racing in Formula One. So I think from that point of view, it probably was a good thing. And then especially to get a real team guy come in like Valtteri Bottas. He obviously is less confrontational and seems to be more of a team player in that regard, is you know, more looking to put his his interests maybe to one side to a, well, obviously I think he is willing to put them to one side. If you go back to the Russian Grand Prix last year when you had the team orders and he was told to let Lewis through, and that was down that sort of stretch run when it was pretty obvious that Lewis was going to win the world championship, but he needed to just to consolidate and solidify his position and just get the, I guess the, what do you want to call it, insurance, the bonus of trying to wrap it up sooner rather than later. So Bottas certainly from that point of view is a team player when he's been called upon. But this year, I mean, I think we've seen a little bit of a feistier Bottas, and we've seen at times too that Bottas is at least as quick as Lewis Hamilton, and at other times there's been that gap between them. I mean, he was very, very good at the Australian Grand Prix to start the season, and literally, I mean, just ran off into the distance with that one. I mean, not even Lewis can catch him in that race, and I think that was a great way for Bottas to start the season, especially after how last year was such a difficult and a disappointing year for him. I mean, his first year at Mercedes was pretty good, but last year was, I think, rather disappointing. It just didn't live up to his own expectations. I'm sure he didn't win a single race last year. I mean, you would have to think, being in a Mercedes and being a good driver like Valtteri Bottas, that you would think that he should be a good for at least a couple of races. I mean, ultimately, I think the question has to be asked, is Valtteri Bottas good enough? Is he world championship material? And well, I mean, if he was the only guy in the Mercedes, then probably he'd walk away with it. I mean, the thing is, he is teammates to Lewis Hamilton, and Lewis, even at the age of 34, is still able to throw it down quite regularly, and it is impressive to see what Lewis can do. And I mean, he's almost machine-like at times, in the way that he's able to just put in the lap times that he needs, and the way that he is able to stay focused and committed and still crank out these wins and these important results as he goes to look for sixth world championship. And it's obviously quite possible that he's going to do it this year. I mean, of course, he is leading the world championship, and there's a long way to go, but certainly Valtteri Bottas has his work cut out to do if he's going to catch Lewis Hamilton. Anyways, it's time to take our first commercial break here on the show this week, so please don't go away. We'll be back in just one moment. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. All right, welcome back to the show here on the Overtime Media Network. And we're going to stick with Mercedes and the quote-unquote dirty racing for the time being, although this next one doesn't have anything to do. Well, it does have a little bit to do with dirty racing, but it didn't actually turn out to be as such. And that is Lewis Hamilton saying that he purposely chose not to block Valtteri Bottas in the early battle that they had at the British Grand Prix. And Hamilton was able to sneak past Bottas at Brooklands just on lap number four. But then Bottas got right back in front of him just a couple of corners later when they headed into Copse. And Hamilton did say afterwards that if it had been any other driver from any other team, he would have taken more risks. risks to defend that position. And he did say that. I mean, you go back to the Azerbaijan Grand Prix a couple of months ago, and Hamilton did say after that one that he was a little bit too nice and you know, letting Valtteri get past him, and he wasn't going to be so generous in the future. So he does go on to say, quote, "It's no secret that Valtteri wants to beat me and I want to beat him, and that fighting spirit is stronger than anything individually for all of us. I think it's so vital, though, to have a respect. I know how hard it is to get a pole here. He did a fantastic job in qualifying, and I know how hard it is to wake up and deliver every weekend and do these other drivers, so the respect is there between us. I think we want to race wheel to wheel and tough. When you're racing with a teammate, it's on a different level." And of course, it's going to be on an even more different level when you take into consideration that not only are they teammates, they're teammates at the best team, and on top of that, it's going to come down to one of those guys that are going to win the world championship this year. Obviously, at the moment, it looks like it's going to be Lewis Hamilton, should things stay the same. But if things go Valtteri Bottas' way, and he's able to close that gap and get close to Lewis Hamilton, or maybe even get in front of him in the world championship, it's going to be interesting to see how that how that relationship stands up and how it goes between these two guys. Because, I mean, Hamilton now 223 points, 184 for Valtteri Bottas. So he has a healthy, comfortable lead up at the top there. But, I mean, heaven forbid, I mean, Lewis could have mechanical problems at the next race in Germany and might not finish, or he might have a bad result. And even if he finishes lower down in the running order by the time it's over, for one reason or another, and say Bottas wins one or two races in a row, then that gap can turn around fairly quickly. I mean, a couple of years ago when Nico Rosberg won his championship at the start of the year, he was off to, I think it was like a 43 or 44 point gap or lead in the world championship over Lewis Hamilton after several races into the season. But as the season wore on, Lewis was able to slowly close that gap and get closer and closer and become a contender for the world championship, and was able to push Nico Rosberg for it. And even though, if you look back at that year, that when his engine let go in Malaysia, that was kind of when his championship really went up in a puff of smoke. I mean, I know that it came down to the final race of the year at Abu Dhabi, but Lewis at that point, all the momentum was with him. He was just rolling, and when his engine let go, that was it. I mean, you can use that as a metaphor, that it's a season went up in a bang in a puff of smoke, but that's a little bit dramatic. But the point is that it is a long season in Formula One. It's very much a marathon. It's not a sprint race, and much like the action that we see on the tracks, it's not all decided in the first corner. And certainly when it comes to the World Championship, it's not decided after one race or even after a couple of races. But when you get halfway through a season and the races start to dwindle a little bit when you get into the latter half of the year, there definitely becomes more pressure on the guy that's chasing in the World Championship to try and close that gap and make a challenge to win the championship. Of course, it's by no means sewn up for Lewis Hamilton. He is sitting comfortably leading it. So, I mean, he does have that luxury. He does have that going for him. But as we've seen before, I mean, and Lewis knows this himself, that things can change drastically and quickly in Formula One. You just don't expect to see it happen at Mercedes, because they rarely have problems of that sort of nature. But it is not beyond the realm of possibility that things do happen, and perhaps Valtteri is able to close it. So, like I say, it would be interesting to see how those pair of drivers get on with one another. You know, should the championship battle really intensify between the two of them? But Mercedes, you know, just talking about some of the different strategies, because Lewis did get like that free pit stop behind the safety car. Valtteri Bottas said afterwards he was regretting the decision not to go with the one stop pit strategy. But Mercedes say that that they're well aware of what they call unconscious favoritism by split race strategies, and they want to make sure that they're not unconsciously favoring either one of their drivers by allowing them to execute different strategies like they did in the British Grand Prix. And it was maybe amplified a little bit more, because by the time it was all said and done, Lewis goes on to win that race, which is his sixth at the British Grand Prix, which is now an all-time record. But Bottas, he thought that a one stop was out of the question, and Hamilton himself even said that he was not sure whether or not he'd be able to stick it out until the end on the hard tires. But yet, right at the very end, just to add insult to injury, if you're Valtteri Bottas, not only do you win the race, but you had the fastest lap, but then out of nowhere on some extremely old tires, Hamilton throws down an extremely fast lap to record the fastest lap of the race, and that was quite something. But yeah, I can understand that they don't want to make it appear that they have or they're favoring one driver over another. But I find it at the same time a bit of an interesting admission by Toto Wolff, because I always thought that it would be sort of up to both drivers and their respective engineers to come up with a strategy. But I guess as a team, they sit down and they decide that. But team principal Toto Wolff said that strategic freedom was a result of driver-led discussions in the team's morning meeting, and then he went on to say that he questioned the move away from the team's tendency to run the same strategy was a fair argument. But I don't know. I guess that if they make the decision that that each driver's cool with it and they're out in the open, in the team meeting, rather than saying they're going to run the same strategy for each car, but if they just decide out in the open and it's transparent that one car is going to run a different strategy than another, and that works out to the benefit of one driver compared to the other one, what would be wrong with that? I don't see anything wrong with going that way, as long, like I say, they're transparent, they're open about it, because it would be, if it wasn't done out of the open, if it was done, say, just in passing, maybe Lewis and his engineer say to Toto, just in passing in the corridor. I mean, oversimplifying and making it sound as unsexy as possible. But they say, okay, we're going to run strategy A this weekend, and then he runs into Bottas a little while later, and he says, well, we're going to be running strategy B. I mean, I could see maybe from that point of view that if it works out, and then from one driver to an unfair advantage, then yeah, I could see why there would be maybe some tension and maybe the possibility for dispute or disgruntlement, whatever you want to call it. But if they're open about it in the team meeting themselves, then sure, why not just go for it? I mean, at the end of the race, you're trying to win, and you would have to think whichever way you're going to go, especially with the Mercedes, that you're going to have a pretty good chance of winning the race. But again, very interesting. I mean, I guess maybe when they go through and they do all the planning, that they come up with a specific strategy, because Mercedes is all about winning, and they're all about scoring the maximum points, because as much as they want to see their drivers win and win championships, they also want to win constructors' championships. And you can tell each and every weekend when they're there, when they win, I mean, they look like the happiest group of people in the entire pit lane, and I just get the impression all the time that even though that they've been so dominant over the past several years, that this is still a group of people that loves to show up to the track each and every Grand Prix weekend. They love to go racing. They love the competition. They love the obviously when they win, and I mean, at least from my point of view, it doesn't seem like this is a group of people that's getting tired of it any time soon. So of course, I think as long as they're still scoring all those points, then perhaps they would all be rather satisfied with that. But I could see that it would become an issue, probably more for the individual drivers, if one strategy constantly worked out more favorably to one driver over the other. Then I think it's just human nature to become suspicious and wonder what's going on, and why is it working out so well for him and it's not working out so well for me. So you can look at that argument for a number of different ways, but certainly I think that maybe this is this past weekend at Silverstone was exaggerated by the fact that that Hamilton did get a little bit lucky with his the safety car after the Giovinazzi accident, and that really worked out in his favor. But but still, there are a lot of different variables when it comes into Formula One, and a lot of different things that can obviously happen out on the track and all on the pit wall to change all these different situations. So Okay, we're going into a break in a couple of minutes here, but let's get this this conversation started now. And of course, Hamilton's going to get a lot of the recognition, obviously being a British driver, winning the British Grand Prix, winning it for a record sixth time. And so that's going to get a lot of the press. But the big moment, obviously, was the accident between Sebastian Vettel and Max Verstappen. I mean, I thought the two of them were having a pretty good scrap out there on the track, and I was really enjoying watching it. And it just seemed to me that that at one point, sooner or later, Max Verstappen was going to pass Sebastian Vettel. He just he looked like he was a little bit faster, and I thought that Seb was only going to be able to hold him off for so long before he would just eventually get gobbled up and passed by Verstappen. I mean, I thought that Vettel did pretty good in the race, in the qualifying. I mean, again, a little bit disappointing if your Ferrari, I mean, they weren't quite obviously up to it again in terms of, I mean, they had a decent car. I mean, I think that the qualifying was quite interesting, the way that different cars, especially Charles Leclerc, looked like he was going to be throwing his own hat into the ring for the for pole position at one point. And the final flying hot lap, I think he set two purple sectors and then just lost it in the final third of the track there, and ended up behind Valtteri Bottas and Lewis Hamilton. I mean, the two of them were only six thousandths of a second apart. I mean, Valtteri sets a pole time of 125.093, and then Hamilton setting a pole time of 125.099. Even Charles isn't that far behind, setting a 125.172. But the thing is, I mean, the Ferrari was never going to be, I think, even though it looked promising at one point, it would have been a real surprise if he was able to pull that off and get pole position. I mean, especially you look at Vettel again, struggled a little bit in qualifying. I mean, it wasn't as bad as a couple of weeks ago at the French Grand Prix when he wasn't even able to go out. Sorry, was that France or Austria? Anyways, you know what I'm talking about, when he had that problem with his car, he wasn't able to actually get out and qualify, and you know, ended up starting further back. I mean, he's had some issues that was the Austrian Grand Prix, and in France he had another issue. I think it was a bit of a sticky upshift, and just wasn't able to set the most optimum time. I mean, the point that I'm getting to is that the pattern over the past couple of races is that qualifying has been a little bit sticky for Sebastian Vettel. It just hasn't worked out. And anyways, I mean, he did qualify sixth in the end, but once the race got underway, I mean, yeah, he was able to, I mean, he did have some scraps early on, but at one point he was up as high as third. And it seemed, at least to me, that just looking at the way that that other cars, what they were going for a strategy, and when they were going in, and what tires they were running at different points in the race, it seemed like a long shot that Sebastian would be able to stick out there, you know, for a long, long time, and still manage to hang on to P3. But I thought that he had a shot at the podium at least. But my big question was whether or not the strategy that he was on was going to work out in his favor, you know, by the time it was all said and done. But it was, it was quite the spectacle to see Verstappen and Sebastian, and then especially when the two had their coming together. I mean, it was something else. I mean, Verstappen had just passed Vettel on lap 37, and they're just coming down to Vail Corner, which is where Giovinazzi went off earlier in the race. Anyways, what happened was Verstappen going into the corner, and Vettel was trying to retake the position, and then just ended up misjudging the whole thing. I think Sebastian said that he expected Max to go one way, and he didn't go the way that he was anticipating to him. And then it was very much a replay of what we saw between the two Red Bulls of Verstappen and Ricciardo at Azerbaijan. Was it last year when they came together at the end of that very, very long start finish straight into turn one, and Ricciardo went right up the back end of Verstappen, and
both of them were out of the race at that time. I was very surprised that that both of them kept going. I mean, Verstappen went over the curb really hard, went into the gravel, and my first reaction is, he's not going to get out. He's in the same position as poor Antonio Giovinazzi, who put it into the gravel and just wasn't get out. But Max was able to get back out on the track, and I was very surprised. I thought, well, he can't go on after getting hit that hard by Sebastian. There's got to be major damage to that car, and how is he going to keep going? But he certainly did, and we'll talk about that and continue the discussion here in just a moment as we take a quick break here on the Overtime Media Network. So please don't go away. We'll be back in just one moment.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 Whiskey declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Scuderia F1 here on the Overtime Media Network. So let's keep talking about that. As we went into the break there, I was just refreshing everyone's memory about the Vettel-Verstappen accident. And like I was saying, I was very surprised that Max, even though he ended up in the gravel, that it didn't stick in there. He was able to keep going, and he was able to get out. Sebastian, not surprising, having to go in and basically do an entire lap around the circuit and then go back for a new front nose and a front wing, and that plummeted him right down to the bottom, which was quite shocking to see. I mean, the way that the field was still fairly compact, I mean, he lost obviously a significant amount of time going the almost an entire lap around before he go into the pits for a new nose. But this is just a bit of a tangent, but for a while there, I mean, he was behind everyone, including the two Williams. I thought, well, if you're Sebastian Vettel in a Ferrari, even though you've just had this rather embarrassing moment that's knocked you out of contention for a possible podium, and just adding to compounding some of the misery that you've had over the past, most of the season so far, and even maybe going back to a portion of last year, that you might end up behind the two Williams, who are, several seconds a lap slower than you. But he was able to get his way past at least Kubica there, so wasn't all doom and gloom for Sebastian Vettel. But yeah, I mean, damage and everything aside, I think by the time it was all said and done, that the 10-second penalty that Vettel was handed for causing a collision, I think that was all fair, and I don't think that there was any reason to complain about it. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, he didn't intentionally cause that accident. I mean, obviously not. I mean, they were both fighting hard for third position, and the guy just misjudged it, and he came out and apologized to Verstappen right after the race, which I think was a classy and the right thing to do. And you just walk away with it and move on. Disappointing, obviously, because he didn't get any points whatsoever. I mean, Max, despite having all the damage to the floor and the diffuser and everything on the back of his car, was able to keep it going. And we'll talk about it in a moment here, because Christian Horner was referring to it as well. But it wasn't impressive in the fact that he was able to keep the car going for another number of laps. I mean, lap 37 is 52 lap race, so there was a fair amount of distance to go. I mean, we're getting to the closing stages, but to keep it going like that. And I mean, at one point I was wondering, I thought maybe it had caught up with him and he was going to drop out of the race. But, you know, good work for Max. I mean, it is difficult, you know, to keep the car going in a situation like that. And like I say, after the race, Vettel did apologize to it. So, you know, I think, like I say, it was the right thing to do it. I mean, Max said, quote, I guess he misjudged his braking in there, but he spoke to him. He apologized to me immediately out of the car, and that's it. It's disappointing, but you can't change it now. And yeah, certainly that's what it is. I mean, Christian Horner, team principal at Red Bull, did say that it was, quote, incredible that Max kept going after the damage he sustained with the accident. But I said, well, I mean, it was quite the thing to see, because as he was going into Vail, that left-hander, and then getting hit the way that he did, I mean, he went sideways into that gravel trap. But before he did that, I mean, he did fly over the curb, and I was a little bit worried there for a split second that he might land funny, and perhaps, you know, if he landed a bit funny, that perhaps a car could roll over, which could be rather nasty. But fortunately, even though he hit the gravel on a bit of an angle, the car came down on all four wheels, and there was no further damage. Well, I mean, there was damage done to the car, but, you know, Max himself was okay. But I think my reaction would have been quite amusing to see. I think I sort of jumped out of my chair. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe that just happened. But I'm sure I'm just one of millions of Formula One fans that said exactly that when that all unfolded. And, you know, I know that Sebastian Vettel has had his issues over the past year or so. I mean, there was quite a few of them. And, I mean, he has a big history with Max Verstappen. You look at Japan last year, you look at China last year. I mean, there's a number of them. I mean, there's been incidents where they've come together, but I mean, that I think was probably the most spectacular Verstappen and Vettel moment that we've seen so far. And Vettel, you know, he didn't have anything to say. I mean, he was very obviously vocal about the 5 seconds penalty that he was given as a result of that unsafe return to the track in Montreal. But there was no real defending that. And yeah, I think that it was you know, a good thing for him just to come out and apologize and just to come, you know, be clean and be forthright and come, you know, with the whole thing. But I do have to wonder now if we've seen peak Sebastian Vettel. I mean, it certainly is not something you expect to see from a four-time world champion. And I think that is as time have gone on and Ferrari has struggled a little bit, that maybe he's just tried a little bit too hard. I mean, he certainly is a good driver. I don't know if he has another world championship in him. I mean, he certainly had a legit shot last year, and I'm sure he probably, even if he hasn't said publicly, I mean, he must think about it, even subconsciously, that was a championship that got away from him. I don't remember off the top of my head what the final standings were in the World Championship, but at least up until the summer break, or even just afterwards, because I mean, Vettel did win in Spa last year, and did so in very dominating fashion. I mean, it was really down between him and Lewis Hamilton, and he kept Lewis at bay at arm's length for a very good portion of the race. So that there was hope for him to win that world championship right up until that point. Then we have everything that happened, like the two of them, Vettel and Hamilton, coming together at the first lap at the Italian Grand Prix. Then we have Singapore. But by that time, it was the momentum had really shifted enough that had moved away from Ferrari and Vettel, and it was firmly on the side of Hamilton and Mercedes. And that's of course the way that it worked out in the end. But I don't know. I've been very critical about Sebastian Vettel here on the show at times, and I really don't know what to say anymore. I mean, it was a bad mistake. He admitted it himself, and it will be interesting to see how he reacts to it and how he comes back and perhaps, you know, I don't know how you bounce back, but Vettel, he was even talking about it, and he was comparing to the situation that he's in this year. It was very different to what he went through in 2014, which was his last year at Red Bull Racing, because, of course, like that year afterwards, that was when Fernando Alonso broke his contract and was able to leave Ferrari and then moved over to McLaren. So that left the opportunity for Sebastian Vettel to go there. And, I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, you know, if you're a four-time world champion, I mean, he didn't win that year. I mean, Lewis Hamilton won in 2014, but still, do you have an opportunity as a guy that's, you know, been the guy for the past several years? I mean, he had a great time, obviously, at Red Bull. I mean, won a lot of races for world championships. I mean, they won constructors titles. I mean, they had it all going on for them there for several years. So it was the right time to move, and it didn't really happen overnight. Of course, it took a little while before Ferrari, that is, that really started to get competitive, and certainly we saw them get very competitive in 2016. They looked more like a legit threat, and 2017, they were at least as good as Mercedes, if not at times a little bit better, and I think that's why it makes this year even more disappointing, considering that they've been trending upwards over the past couple of years, and this year just regressing the way that they have. But anyways, Vettel says that the problems that he's having now, and there are similarities because that was Ricardo's first year as a younger driver at Red Bull, and now you have Sebastian Vettel and Charles Leclerc again. You know, he's got a younger teammate with him, and very much like the time at Red Bull in 2014, the younger teammate is outperforming and outdoing him in certain circumstances, but he's not really letting it really go to the get into his head and really worry about it. And he does say that, quote, "When you're talking about the frustrations, I think it's maybe here and there and the end results that's missing. In terms of the races we've had, they could have gone the other way as well. So I think we need to be fair and not judging upon one particular lap, like when obviously he crashed with Max Verstappen." But he continues, quote, "But it happened, and the laps up to that point were quite strong. We started sixth, so not by chance found ourselves a third at some point. I think the other races could have been different as well, so I'm not too worried, but I know that you could have had better results come Sunday. I'm looking forward to Germany now." And Germany, of course, was a real disaster for Vettel. I mean, he was leading that race, and he looked really dominant. And then we had this bizarre incident of this patchy showers that was raining on one part of the circuit at Hockenheim and not the other. And then Vettel just got into a bit of a greasy patch of track in the stadium section and just slid off into the gravel and just buried the car, wasn't able to keep going. And yeah, just I remember it vividly, just the in-car camera and a frustrated and upset Sebastian Vettel banging his hands on the steering wheel after he went into the gravel and got stuck. And that must have been very, very disappointing and very upsetting. But like I say, I mean, where does he go? I mean, Lewis Hamilton is convinced that Vettel has what it takes to bounce back, and he says, I quote, "I absolutely believe that he'll rebound. You look at the greats playing tennis. He's one of those. He's had a difficult race today, but he is a four-time world champion. He will recover and redeem himself if he feels he needs to, and he will come back strong in the next race. That's what great athletes do." So certainly, at least from a sporting point of view, he's got Lewis Hamilton in his corner, believing that that he's got everything that he needs to pull it back together, at least from a mental point of view, from a, I guess, a mental toughness kind of point of view, and overcome these struggles. I mean, the car is another issue. I mean, at times they look competitive. At times they look like they're obviously well behind Mercedes. And Sebastian obviously would want to get a good result at the next race. It's going to be his home race in Germany. But I don't think it really matters where he wins, if he's going to win a race this year. I think that he just needs to get a run of good results. I think if anything, just for his own confidence, and even if he's not feeling a lack of confidence at the moment, I think maybe from the point of view, just to get some momentum and get a rhythm going again, because that's been the big problem with Ferrari. I think that because the car has not been able to deliver what they were expecting, that they just haven't been able to get the results that we've maybe come to expect over the last year or two. And that's just putting extra pressure on them. So if he was able to turn it around and get a string of good results, and maybe Charles Leclerc as well, who's able to get close. I mean, he's come close a couple of times to win a Grand Prix. It just hasn't worked out. I mean, at Bahrain, he had the mechanical issue. And then in Austria a couple of weeks ago, he just wasn't Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. And that's who ended up winning that one. But I think that's a lot of what Ferrari needs at the moment, is just to get some consistent good results and try and build upon it. I don't think that there's going to be a lot more that's going to come out of the car that they have this year. It's just too far into the season now. And I think that would require too much of philosophical change to the way that they designed and built this car, that it seems too much now to think that they can rebuild it or go with a different philosophy at this point in the season and basically rebuild the car now. It's just not going to happen. But still, I mean, if they were going to get some maybe a race win here or there, and maybe even just some more podiums and just some more competitive moments out there on the track, be it during qualifying or be it during the race, that's exactly what Ferrari needs. Anyways, time for the final break here on the show this week, and then we come back, we're going to start shutting it down. There's a couple of interesting things to talk about, and we're going to start talking about another disastrous weekend for Haas F1, and we'll do that right after the break. So please don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, welcome back to Scuderia F1 here on the Overtime Media Network. And as I said, it was another bad weekend for Haas F1. This time, it was a coming together between the two cars on the opening lap at Silverstone. And that ended up damaging both cars, that they eventually did retire. And their team principal, Gunther Steiner, said it is not acceptable for their coming together. They did have a bit of an incident, if you're remember, back in Spain at the end of the long start finish straight, and Magnussen firmly shutting the door as they went through turn one into turn two. Roman Grosjean was quite upset about it, but this time they ran side by side through the first couple of corners at the start of the British Grand Prix, and they came they made brief contact just as they came into the long hangar straight there, and the impact gave Magnussen a puncture in his left rear tire and a puncture in Grosjean's right rear, and both drivers lost it on race radio, and they were freaking out in their communications back to the pits, and both of them were out of the race a couple of laps later. And Gunther, obviously not very happy, he went on to say, and I quote, "It is not acceptable what happened. I was pretty clear with him after Barcelona what not to do. In the end, we are in a difficult position at the moment, trying to find out about the car on the track. Everybody works hard like hell, and then it seems we've got a chance when our long runs were okay. Then we crash into each other on turn five, which is not acceptable." He also went on to say that the drivers didn't speak because he simply told them what he thought when they met over the issue post race, and that was it. And honestly, I don't know how you can be either Magnussen and Grosjean and try and defend that. But I mean, the thing was, I mean, Grosjean, he did have the inside to the corner, but at the same time, I mean, he was kind of pushing Magnussen out a little bit, and of course, he didn't want to go off to the grass. So I mean, there's going to be so much ground that he's going to give. But at the end of the day, driving into your teammates in Formula One is like committing the ultimate cardinal Formula One sin, and that's exactly what those two guys did, and certainly an opportunity to make a run at maybe a points finish was thrown out the window. I mean, they've struggled all year long, so I mean, who knows? I mean, to say that that they might have had a shot to finish in the points, that might be a little bit of wishful thinking. So, who knows? Maybe maybe them knocking each other out of the race didn't really have that disastrous effect on them that perhaps they weren't going to score points anyways. But obviously, it is embarrassing when it happens, and it doesn't look good. And you can understand the frustration in Günther Steiner's in his statements. Anyways, this is another one that's a bit weird. I mean, this came out of the show last week that Haas's title sponsor, Rich Energy, had terminated their sponsorship deal with them, and they cited a lack of poor performance at the Austrian Grand Prix that previous weekend, and they didn't like the Formula One atmosphere, thought it was too PC and things like that, and that was kind of bizarre. I thought, well, that seems like a pretty low move to end your sponsorship deal by tweeting about it. And then it comes out that wasn't even the case. The CEO was saying that it was some minority shareholders, and that there was nothing to it. That they weren't going to end their sponsorship deal with Haas, and that they were happy with it, and there weren't any problems. And now all of a sudden, it's gone on that the CEO, who was a bit of a controversial fellow by the name of William Storr, he's out. He'd been in a dispute with the shareholders with the company for the past several days after that bizarre Twitter announcement, and then all of a sudden now he said that that he's out. You know, that it is an extremely strange situation, and I don't really know what to make of it. Quite honestly, I kind of get the feeling, and this is just my gut feeling. It's nothing more than that. I mean, I don't have any insider information, but it almost kind of seems like it's a bit of a publicity stunt. But he was he's gone. I mean, they did tweet about it again, saying that William Storr, founder of Rich Energy, has sold his majority stake in the legal entity of Rich Energy Limited. The decision was reluctantly reached due to the duplicitous conduct of minority stakeholders. And to quote Arnold Schwarzenegger, he will be back. So who knows? But just a bizarre kind of thing going on, and I mean, it's got to be a bit of an annoyance, if anything, to Haas. I mean, they've had a bit of a bad season so far. Obviously, the cars haven't lived up to anything, and they're struggling a little bit to score points and to finish races and all those sorts of things. And you get all this BS going on off the track with your title sponsor, so a bit strange. Like I say, I kind of get the feeling that it's a no. There's no such thing as bad press kind of situation, but who knows? That's just my take on it. It may be right, and I may be off by a country mile. Who knows? Anyways, another cool thing that came out of the British Grand Prix, that Red Bull set a world record for a pit stop. And now get this, it was a 1.91 second pit stop. And that is absolutely mind-blowing to think that a Formula One car can come into the pits, get stationary, and less than 2 seconds later, he's got four new tires put on the car, and he's good to go, and he's out of the pit box, back heading out onto the racetrack again. And that absolutely blew my mind. I think the previous record was set by Williams a couple of years ago, and that was just a hundredth of a second slower, if you can believe that. I mean, a hundredth of a second. I think the time they set, 1.92 seconds, sticks into my mind. But it was set when Pierre Gasly came into to make his pit stop, and it is the fastest Formula One pit stop in history. So it absolutely mind-blowing things, and it is impressive, and it doesn't really matter which team it is. Obviously, some pit crews are better than others, but I mean, all of them, just to think in general that a Formula One car can come in off of the track, come to a complete stop, and within a couple of seconds has a completely fresh rubber all the way around the car and is heading back out on the track. It absolutely impresses me each and every time, and I never really get bored of watching it. Anyway, so sticking a little bit with Red Bull here again, Christian Horner said this past weekend that Pierre Gasly was like a different driver at the British Grand Prix, and this is sort of come on the heels of the statement that Horner had made the week before, that Gasly needed to press Control-Alt-Delete and reboot his season, and certainly he has seemed to have responded to that, well, at least for one race. We'll have to see what it's like when we go to Germany and then to Hungary over the next couple of weeks, and then again after the summer break. But there had been a bit of a speculation that perhaps the Frenchman could be replaced at some time during the campaign. I mean, it is not out of the realm of possibility. I mean, you can ask Danny Kvyat. I mean, he was with Red Bull for a couple, just rather briefly. I mean, he went from Red Bull to Red Bull. He went from Toro Rosso to Red Bull. And then by the time they got to the Russian Grand Prix, which was at the beginning of the season, I think was in 2016 or 2015. Whenever it was that after he had too many high profile incidents, then that was it. He was out, and he'd been demoted, and then Max Verstappen was promoted in his in place to replace Kvyat at Red Bull, and certainly, I mean that move has worked out. I mean Kvyat was struggling at that time, and Max has gone on to do some wonderful things in Formula One, is leaving the window open that there's still a lot more to come. But the point is that you can see why people are drawing those conclusions and making those speculations as to whether or not Pierre Gasly is going to stick, or if perhaps that he could be replaced, because they have a history. They've done it before and set that precedent with Danny Kvyat. So whether or not Pierre Gasly has come close to that line in the sand and has put one foot or both foot over it, or both feet over it, that's a question that you can only really ask and get an answer from Red Bull, where that limit is before they decide to pull the plug. I mean, at least in Gasly's favor, I mean the results or the problems he's had is just been from the results on the track. I mean, he hasn't had any high profile shunts with some of the big, like the leaders in Formula One, but he has been disappointing this far. I mean, obviously, I mean, he's still a young guy, but he's got a lot of talent, and everybody was expecting that Pierre Gasly might get some more points by moving to Red Bull, and they've been a little bit far and few between so far coming this year. So who knows whether or not that will continue, or that was just a flash in the pan. But we'll have to keep an eye on it and see what happens with Danny Kvyat over the coming races. Sorry, not with Danny Kvyat, although he had a pretty good race on Sunday. I should say with Pierre Gasly, whether or not he can keep it going and start getting his season rolling, even though we're almost 50% of the way through the season now. He's obviously got a lot to make up for. I mean, they're not in danger of losing their spot in the World Championship, but they could certainly be a lot further up. And, you've got to think that, I think with the 200 some odd points that they have in the World Championship right now, most of those have come from Max Verstappen. So you think that if Gasly was scoring better or scoring more points on a more regular basis, that they should be higher up in the Constructors' Championship. And I think that's where it's coming from. I mean, they're not going to win Constructors by any means, Red Bull that is, but certainly they want to do a lot better. And Gasly for at least one race has done a little bit more to carry his own weight, and so hopefully he, for his sake, he keeps it going. Okay, just a couple more things now as we start to dim the lights in the studio here. There's been a couple of pieces dripping out this week about the 2021 rules and some of the proposed changes they want to make for the racing. So there's a couple of different areas that they're looking at. They're looking at more raceable cars. They're looking at more competitive grids, and they want cars that make you go, wow, that's one thing. And they also want a financially viable championship. So, I mean, they've already talked about that with like a budget cap or whatever you want to call it. The number that was thrown out there was £175 million per year. But the one race, the one thing that they do want is the more raceable cars, and the regulations that they forced through for this year, they were an attempt, sort of an interim sort of thing to remedy and change and improve some of the issues that they had with the current regulations that came in 2017, and they kind of forced those through, and they've only had so many or they've only had so much effect. I mean, there were some promising things that were said by some of the drivers during winter testing, but then just a week ago that Nico Hülkenberg came out and said that it's still just as hard to follow a car and stay close to a car and even pass a car as it is now that it's ever been. So the one thing that they are trying to do, like I say, is a more raceable car. So aerodynamics have a lot to do with that. And then, some of the other areas that they're looking at are more competitive grids. And they're, well, of course, this how they implement all these desires that they want. But Ross Brawn, who's the sporting director at Formula One, said that even though that the British Grand Prix was an exciting race, you still had the fact that Valtteri Bottas was over 3 seconds faster in qualifying than Robert Kubica's P20 time. So there is a big gap. And then, of course, if you have more competitive grids, then then in theory there's going to be more unpredictability, and maybe the more chances that you're not going to have one specific team like Mercedes running away with it each and every year. And then that brings in the next thing that not only do they want the cars to be better for overtaking and racing and for passing, but they also want cars that will make you go. And I love how they have the article on the Formula One air site says cars that make you go wow, and the wow is in inverted commas. it's kind of interesting. So they said they want cars that are going to be aesthetically pleasing, and there are some mock-ups going out there. I mean, if you go to motorsport.com, they do have some concepts up there, and very much they look like Formula One cars of the 1990s to a certain extent. You don't have the raised nose on the car. They're lower down. There's going to be more ground effects apparently, and also a bigger diffuser. So it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out in the end, and whether or not they're able to meet these different things that they're looking at. But it does sound promising. I mean, recently you had Lewis Hamilton and Nico Hülkenberg and Alex Wirtz, who's a former Formula One driver, involved in some of the discussions. I mean, all the stakeholders are there. So it is slowly coming together. I think it's a lot slower than anybody had ever hoped for. So I really hope that whatever happens, that by the time it's all said and done, that that they do come up with something that is really worthwhile and is going to deliver. So that is the big challenge that they have to do, and we'll wait and see whether or not they can get it done. So anyways, that's it. Could probably go on for a lot longer, but I got started a lot later tonight than I usually do, and it's getting close to 11 o'clock here in on the West Coast, so I've still got an hour or two of processing to do before this one can go out for download. And it's only Wednesday night here, so I don't want to make it too late, well, with a couple more days of work coming up. But anyways, thank you all so very much for downloading and listening to the show this week. And of course, if you want to support us, the best and the easiest and the quickest way is just to hop onto Apple Podcasts or wherever you download the show, and leave us a nice rating and a review. And that's the best way to help the show grow and make it more visible. And like I've said many times, our goal here is to share our love with Formula One with other Formula One fans all around the world. And we enjoy doing that each and every week. So anyways, enjoy the rest of the week, and enjoy everything that's coming up. And we will be back again very, very soon. If you want to get in touch with us, of course, you can get us on Twitter at ScuderiaF1 Pod, or you can email us at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com. And that's it. That's a wrap. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk to you again very, very soon. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 Podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.